Hello everyone in Skeptoland. This is Don with a special interview with SkepDoc, Dr. Harriet Hall. Dr. Hall is a retired family physician and former Air Force flight surgeon. She is one of the founders of Science-Based Medicine Blog and is its current editor. You may have seen her work in the magazines Skeptic or Skeptic Inquirer, where she's a contributing editor. She is also a medical advisor and author on articles on Quackwatch. She has also published an autobiography of her life and adventures as an Air Force surgeon called Women Aren't Supposed to Fly, The Memoirs of a Female Flight Surgeon. I am interviewing her just prior to her talk for CFI at Langara called How to Identify Pseudoscience, Quackery, and Fraud. Hello, Dr. Hall. We're grateful you could take some time out of your busy schedule to come on our show.
Thank you.
So you're touring the Lower Mainland and you're doing a few talks, but you're doing a talk here tonight. What's the talk about, Matt?
It's about how to identify science and pseudoscience and quackery and fraud.
And what got you involved in the skeptical movement?
Well, I started reading Skeptical Inquirer magazine many years ago, and it intrigued me. It was fascinating to see things debunked and to see myths punctured and find out how the world really worked. And it was very empowering to develop critical thinking skills. And then gradually I discovered that I could, instead of just reading about skepticism, I could write about it, and people wanted to read what I had to say. So I started writing, and I've been enjoying that very much. It's kind of a way of giving back to the skeptical movement. You pay them for all that they've given me.
Sounds fascinating. You said you have skeptical tools that you learned to discover. Can you expand on some of those tools?
Well, the whole process of critical thinking, how to evaluate arguments and how to understand what the scientific method is really about. Believe it or not, most doctors don't really understand science. They kind of come at it sideways in medical school, and they don't grasp the fundamental principles that they need to really distinguish alternative medicine from conventional medicine.
Interesting. From what I understand, you had your medical career start in the Air Force.
Yes.
Is there a lot of pseudoscience or misunderstanding of critical thinking in the Air Force in general, in particular the medical area of it?
I never saw any pseudoscience in the Air Force, but I retired in 1989. And things have changed. Today they're teaching battlefield acupuncture to medical doctors in the Air Force.
Why do you think there's been this degrading of the standards?
It's a cultural phenomenon in our whole society. Quackery is even infiltrating our medical schools. We call it quackademia.
It's a nice term, quackademia. So then I can assume that it bothers you that more doctors aren't being advocates for critical thinking.
It certainly does. One of the writers on our blog, Val Jones, came up with a term for that. She calls them shruggies. These are the people who just shrug their shoulders and say, oh, it's not important, it doesn't really matter. And I think doctors have a standard to maintain. We set ourselves up to be the experts in medical care and what works to help people. And if we don't stand up for science and reason, we lose our credibility.
On that note, my research team has discovered that you had a column in O Magazine, the Oprah Winfrey Magazine.
Yes.
Now, from what my research team has uncovered, Oprah isn't known to be the most critical thinker in the world, and quite often has pseudoscience on her show and in her magazine.
Have you sold your soul to the dark side?
Well, I was very conflicted about joining the Oprah organization because of that very reason. And I found it a very frustrating experience. I'm not writing for them anymore. The frustrations were mainly due to the requirements of writing for a popular magazine, the editorial restrictions, and it was very difficult working with their editors. And what annoyed me the most was they eventually fired me, and they didn't even have the common courtesy to tell me that I was fired. They left me to figure it out little by little for myself. And if your listeners are interested in the details, I've written about the whole experience on the Science-Based Medicine blog.
Excellent, excellent. Speaking of the Science-Based Medical blog, you do that with other people, right?
Yes.
Besides yourself, because I'm sure you're the best participant in that particular adventure. But who else in there would you recommend people to check out, and why?
Every one of them. They're all different. each writer on that blog has a different personality, a different approach, different viewpoint, different talents, different strengths, and they all combine to make a product that's much greater than any one individual blogger could ever hope to produce.
Putting these two, the old magazine with the science-based blog that you have, one of the complaints or discussions is how jazzy scientists should be, in particular, and doctors as well, at trying to present their side of the story. I mean, one of the things that pseudoscience has done really, really well, they have good marketing, they have all the razzle-madazzle, and it's often quite hard for the skeptic, rational side combat that. Do you combat that, or do you just figure if you plug away at it with reality eventually wins out?
I'm not good at the razzmatazz and the PR. I just try to present the factual information and try to get the word out in any way I can. But you're right, skeptics have not done as good a marketing job as some of the quacks.
Well, you see, we actually are handicapped, right? Because as good skeptics, as people who believe in the scientific method, we actually have to follow reality. We're not allowed to make stuff up.
Right.
Whereas they're not hindered by this whole reality thing, right?
Good point.
In the skeptic community, there's been a big debate about how confrontational we should be. The accommodationists on the one side, who think aggressive tactics only turn people off, and those who are confrontational who believe that we should proactively engage people. Radio Free Thinkers helped pioneer the concept of skepticism, where we actively go out and confront those who are peddling pseudoscience and quack medicine. As an example, we were at Deepak Chopra's last show here in Vancouver and actively tried to inform those seeing the shows about the fraudulent nature of Deepak's performance. So, that said, do you think that skepticism should be limited to passive, here's the information if you want it approach, or a more engaged approach like skepticism?
I think when human lives are at stake, you have to be confrontational. When it comes to something like the anti-vaccine activists, if you try to be accommodating with those people, you're going to put our public health in danger and people are going to die. So we have to stand up for things like that when people are being harmed.
I think that that's a good point. In fact, we had an anti-vax movement here in Vancouver. It's been everywhere. And they were doing a public debate, and I myself got into a verbal confrontation in a public place just because, again, I agree with you. I think it, you know, there are some things that are so important that you have to take a principled stand on it, even if it is unpopular.
But I think you can be confrontational without being obnoxious, and that's what I aim for. I aim to correct errors and point out people's errors and thinking, but I try to be dispassionate and factual and address the issues rather than insulting and personally attacking the people who are making the errors.
And I think sometimes that's one of the hard parts that come across is that, you know, in many ways you can be angry at the person saying it, but it's not the person you're mad at. It's the warping of the truth or the lies that they tell. And you're right, it's important to get on that, because if you lower to their level, because a lot of them will do ad hominem attacks, that doesn't help anybody. And again, the truth is ultimately the thing we should be promoting, I think.
Right.
You've been to Vancouver before?
Yes, I have.
And I'm sure you've checked out many of our homeopathic clinics and naturopaths. And do you find the, I don't know if, I guess it's growing industry here in Vancouver to be somewhat disheartening? Or?
It's growing everywhere, and yes, it's disheartening. And we keep fighting it, and we don't seem to be making progress. But I try to remind myself that if we hadn't been speaking out, it might have grown even more than it has.
Quite true. In fact, I heard from a friend of mine that Deepak Chopra has really seen some video games. So it's a whole new generation that will be tested with their rational and critical thinking.
On a different line, recently I was involved in a debate whose question was, is it wrong to eat meat? I, successfully I believe, defended the eating meat is okay side. Do you have an opinion about the, quote, vegetarianism will save the world, or, quote, meat will destroy the planet type movements?
I try to stick to just the health issues, and I've written at least 3 articles on the science-based medicine blog now about what the healthiest diet is, and 2 of them were on the China study, and 1 was on whether eating red meat is harmful to your health. And I've looked at the evidence, and from what I understand, we don't have really conclusive evidence about any of that stuff, but we have reasonable evidence that it's wise to limit the amount of red meat in your diet. But we don't have any good evidence that it would be wise to eliminate meat entirely. And in the red meat article that I wrote on the blog, I ended by saying, Aristotle said moderation in all things. Mom said eat your vegetables. They were both right.
That sounds good. What about the raw food movement? I don't know if you've done any research into that, but that's another one that's been growing, that cooking your food is also bad because it denatures the proteins or what have you. And although, of course, I thought that was one of the benefits of cooking was to do such a thing, but...
Well, there's certainly no scientific support for the raw food diet. I've also had an extensive series of interactions with a lady who believes in an all-fruit diet, and I wrote that up for one of my articles. It's fascinating to try to reason with her. She was stuck back in the thinking of the 19th century and before, and wasn't willing to look at any evidence since then. She thought smallpox is still with us, only we're calling it chickenpox today. Even after I explained to her that we can see the virus under a microscope, we can tell them apart, we even sequenced the entire genome of the smallpox virus. She says, oh no, viruses don't cause disease. And when you think you're seeing viruses under the microscope, you're just seeing the cellular debris that's caused by all the toxins in your system.
So there was no dissent into the whole big pharma or big medicine just out to convince us? I mean, that's often a red flag that's raised. And sadly enough, I think sometimes it's not totally erroneous in the sense that, you know, pharmaceutical companies and all that, they do have a vested interest that sometimes don't go smoothly with public interest. And so when you sit there and you promote particular science-based issues like the vaccine, and then people throw in your face, oh yeah, but you're just an advocate for big pharma or big medicine, how do you square that circle to say, well, I'm not a corporate shill, but just because they're corporations doesn't mean they're innately evil?
Well, you can try to point that out to people, but they don't usually listen. I can ask them to show me any evidence that any of us on the science-based medicine blog have ever received a penny from a pharmaceutical company, because we haven't. And you know, it's easy for them to make those accusations. It's easy to say just because pharmaceutical companies are making money that they must be producing bogus products, because good products make money. And it's in the ultimate interest of the pharmaceutical industry to make products that work and that will continue to succeed and that people will continue to buy. Because if something doesn't work, science usually eventually figures it out and rejects it.
Of course, then that's after the CEO has got his big fat bonus and moved on. Sorry. Okay.
I'm going to take this interview in a different direction now. Recently, the United States government apologized to the state of Guatemala for medical experiments they performed that were improper. I understand if you don't wish to comment on this, but one of the hallmarks of Radio Free Thinker is its attempt to stretch the scope of skepticism. So, the work done in the U.S. was scientific. However, the morality of it is questionable. Do you think we can apply our critical thinking skills, skepticism, and the scientific method to the question of morality?
Well, it's a coincidence that you're asking me that, because the last article I put up on the blog was a review of Sam Harris's new book, The Moral Landscape, where he says that science can study morality and can make moral judgments and value judgments. And I used to disagree with that, but I agree with him after reading his book. And on the blurb on the back of the book, Richard Dawkins has a quotation saying that he changed his mind after reading Harris's book, too. So, yes, I think any human question is open to rational inquiry. And the scientific method is the only reliable method we've ever found to approach the truth about anything. It may be difficult, it may be next to impossible, but it's certainly worth trying to apply science to those questions.
Keeping to the area of morality, another debate is the idea of palliative care, that for those people who are desperate for a cure and where modern medicine can offer little hope, it might be okay to lighten up on the quacks. Even if they don't offer any real cure, they do offer hope. that if all alt medicine can offer is a placebo effect, that sometimes that's enough.
I think that prescribing placebos is always unethical. It's generally frowned upon by medical ethics. And the important point to me is that real medicine can offer real hope, and you don't have to offer false hope to people. And real medicine can offer placebo effects too. The doctor's caring approach and the personal interactions and all that, they're part of all good medicine. And I think we should be learning something from the quacks and learning how to do that better within scientific medicine.
Excellent. Any final words you would have for our audience with regards to science, medicine, the world?
I'd like to quote Bill Nye, the science guy. Science rules.
Well, thank you very much for your time. Good luck with your talk.
Thank you.
Now back to Radio Freethinker after this brief commercial.